Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Danielle, the Fed starts $95 billion in liquidity reduction today. What is that, and what does it mean?
Well, this is the quantitative tapering, right? So we know that, or many people will recall, that we had these great injections of liquidity from central banks into the banking system and then into the financial markets. Over the last decade, we've had it repeatedly, but particularly from the March 20 bottom during the pandemic, there was trillions of dollars flooded into the banking system, and that really floated all boats in terms of asset prices globally. And what's happening now is, of course, central banks have been cutting back on their injections very late in the game, in my view, considering that we had such wild frenzy in financial markets, as well as such an escalation in many prices of consumer goods and commodities and that sort of thing. So anyway, the injections of liquidity that benefited, or let's say boosted, the prices of so many things over the past couple of years have been coming back out of financial markets. And the U.S. Fed had said that it was going to do so at the rate of $47 billion a month for June, July, and August, and then it was supposed to double that to $95 billion a month starting in September. Well, in fact, as we look at the data, they only actually withdrew about $17 billion a month in the last 3 months, but now they're supposed to go, 5x that for starting today in September. So we'll see if they actually do deliver that, but they seem to be very intent on fighting price inflation right now. So if you think about that, this is a new wrinkle we've not had in past cycles, to the extent that they're trying to take out all this excess liquidity this late in the cycle, on top of course, hiking rates at the fastest pace that we've seen since 1980. If you think about it, in past cycles, the norm has been, ever since Greenspan, it's been this sort of measured 0.25 increase every sort of FOMC meeting, and there was all this telegraphing and time and patience, and everyone knew what was coming and could expect and all that. Well, in this cycle, we've gone from a policy rate in the U.S. of 0 to 0.25% in March to what is expected to be now 4.25 to 4.5 within the next 6 months. So it's really just mind-boggling. Like, no one would have foreseen. I remember writing in February to our clients that rates were heading up and that it was likely that you could see, variable rate mortgages go from as much as 1.35, which was an all-time low at that time, to double over that over the next few months to 2.7. In fact, though, what we've seen is that they're now, well into the fours. So it's really an unprecedented time of monetary shock, liquidity shock, withdrawal of all this from financial markets, which have become, of course, extremely addicted to all this support and so-called free money. So I think that at this point, the central banks are reacting to the fact that they were, very behind the curve. I've mentioned many times that inflation is a lagging indicator, right? And by that I mean that when we get the readings, it's really backward looking. And so is moves in monetary policy, right? So that there is a lag time of many quarters for the moves that the central bank makes at the front end or short end of the yield curve, which impacts things like variable rate mortgages and the prime rate and that sort of thing in the banking system. The moves they make typically filter through the economy over many months, up sometimes a year and a half to 2 years, because not all debt, of course, comes up for renewal right away. Not all debt is floating. Many things are fixed term. But the bond market, of course, moves in anticipation of the central bank stuff. So the bond market is the thing that has moved so abruptly as the central bank started doing these 0.75, you know, again, like I said, three times the normal rate of what they used to do in a typical cycle since 1980. They're now doing that every meeting. And so the bond market repriced so rapidly that that's what impacted the mortgage rates and things that consumer and commercial credit is based on. So the doubling of mortgage payments in a matter of months is no small feat for an economy that's been incredibly levered on housing as an asset class and as a sector in the economy. So you're seeing this wildly hit all sorts of things. Mortgage applications in the U.S. again, the latest week were down 64% year over year. You know, the Home Depot is down 30%, Lowe's is down 25%. Like, all the sectors that feed into that housing, the average sales are off 20% year over year in America. And in Canada, we're seeing, you know, equally scary numbers. Now, all that, I say scary, but essential, right? Because we knew we were in this crazy bubble. It was causing all this imbalance and unproductive choices and allocations of capital in our economy. So we definitely need to have this pricing cycle. Is just that it is going to be very painful and is already being very painful for the people that went into it, you know, naive, thinking that rates would never go up or just over-leveraged. You know, the thing about life is it's full of all types of uncertainty, and this is why I always harp on about how important it is to not have a lot of financial leverage, certainly not personally, and even in businesses, you know, the ones that go into these downturns, which are a regular recurring part of every economic cycle, and especially with central banks, you know, using all these goosing techniques to try and make the growth side that much higher. What they end up doing is making the bust side of the equation that much harder as well. And so the yin to that yang is that we're now facing probably a steeper recession or a worse recession than we've seen probably in, you know, since 2008, potentially even 1980, which, you know, had those back-to-back recessions in the early 80s, because similarly then we were coming off a major boom in the housing sector, and it had become disproportionately too large relative to everything else that was going on in the economy, and too many people had been levering up to buy housing thinking it never went down and all that nonsense. So what we're seeing now is the mean reversion part of that, and of course all assets are dropping. The one sort of silver lining that I like to point to is that everything, basically all long duration assets have no maturity dates, which are things like commodities, which are things like Bitcoin. You know, it's off 70% since November. Equities are tumbling, as I've said. They have no maturity date. They have no guaranteed payment. There's nothing, you know, you basically just buy them on the hope that over your holding period they'll go up. But there's no requirement that they do. And in fact, at the end of these really big boom cycles, what you more typically find is that equities fall significantly in price and spend years just trying to get back to that prior peak. We've seen that repeatedly. So people really shouldn't be surprised that we are, you know, going into this. Like, I was at a dinner party last weekend and I overheard someone saying how shocked they were that equities had moved to the downside so much, they said, this year, which is actually a very telling comment, because historically, at the when valuations have become so extreme and all this excess liquidity and manipulation I was speaking of and widespread speculation, as we've discussed before, it's very typical to see stocks come off by at least half. And the fact that, you know, the S&P is presently off less than 20 is just an indication of the fact that we're probably, you know, not long into this down cycle. Things like earnings per share, which is you know, everyone likes to talk about the price to earnings multiple. They don't seem to appreciate that during recessions, it's quite often, it's quite typical for earnings to come down 25%. Again, we were at a record peak in earnings during the pandemic for the large corporations for all sorts of sort of help reasons they got from the money that was being doled out by the governments. So you could see a greater than 25% contraction in earnings this particular cycle. And, you know, just to have that correction in the PE and the fact that price, because, you know, the animal spirits tend to get squeezed out during bear markets, and the amount, the multiple that people are willing or able to spend comes down. And typically you'll see, everyone talks about a PE of 16 as being the historical average, but it's quite typical to see PEs come down closer to 12 and even less at the trough of bear markets. So that could take the S&P, for example, easily down 50% from where it was in December of 21 to something like a 2400 level. You know, the TSX could easily go back to 11,000 area. So those are not, you know, crazy things to say. That's historically informed assessments of where price may head here. But on the upside, we've also seen this, you know, well, this historic sell-off in bonds across the board. This has been the worst period for bonds in many, many decades. So that is a quite unusual, something we didn't see since the sort of 1970s when an inflation scare there also prompted, you know, rapid tightening in the policy rates and a big, you know, really large bear market. 73, 74 was back-to-back 25% drops at that time. And the bond market initially, of course, sold off as well for the same reason. Interest rate concerns, right? The fact that they were thinking that, you know, rates were going to continue higher indefinitely. Well, the only very significant difference there is that bonds do have, of course, a maturity value and a face value, a guaranteed return of principal date, and guaranteed income payments that must be made every 6 months. So they're an entirely different category than these other instruments, as I say, which are all indefinite and hope-based. And so what ends up happening, and we've seen this many times, is that you get yields rising in this period of really rate shock, as I've described, and then ultimately yields tend to peak before central banks are now starting to pivot, you know, so that's that movement away from, oh boy, I think we've tightened enough, again, because their tightening is at a lag through the economy, so they've tightened so much, we're not going to see the full impact of this, you know, for even another year, and already the economy has turned down so sharply. So the yields typically peak just before and then start to come down as the central banks finally go to pause, you know, taking a break and saying, oh, the economy is looking pretty scary, or unemployment is rising rapidly. And don't forget, the Fed has a dual mandate, not just price stability or trying to target 2% inflation, but also trying to keep full employment in the economy. So at some point here, and I think it's going to happen in the next few months, their two mandates are going to be diametrically opposed, right? So the hikes they've already done, never mind the ones they're going to do, never mind the QT on top of that, is slowing, and we've already seen a pickup in layoffs, significant announcements from big companies like Goldman Sachs and all sorts of people, companies in other sectors are laying people off now. Those layoffs will feed into the unemployment rate, which again is a lagging indicator on the labor conditions. But ultimately, once the unemployment rate starts to come up, you're going to see a pause because their two mandates are now definitely conflicting with each other. And at that point, that's when you usually see things like investment grade bonds that have sold off in the last year rally very strongly. So they're one of the few assets that rebounds as the bear market in stocks continues and as the recession continues. And it's not until usually, you know, well into the recession when the central banks are almost done their cutting cycle that you'll see stocks finally make a bottom. So my point would be we could see that over the next, you know, 6 months. We could see that over the next year. But it's probable here that the bond market, the actual yields that are priced into the bond market may be peaking out, and we're going to see them continue lower as bonds get a bid in this very uncertain environment.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, how are the two, what used to be the hottest housing markets in the world, Canada and Australia, holding up?
Well, the rate shock has been significant, and it continues to be, right? So you're seeing this massive downturn in terms of the amount of sales that are being completed. There's a lot of sales that are being canceled, which is a really bizarre, you know, something that you don't normally see in a healthy market, but a lot of people are backing out or not able to get the financing that they were initially promised because, as I say, with this dramatic shift in rates, it is entirely different in terms of what people can afford. So, you know, the average sale price in Canada in the last month was about $615,000 compared to, you know, just in February, the average sale price was being completed around $817,000. So that's a huge difference, right? And that's not to say that there's a lot of people that have their houses listed or were thinking of having their houses listed that are now trying to hold off because they think, oh, it's not a great time to sell. But invariably what happens is that, you know, there's an urgency that starts to develop. And it's twofold. It's one, because the investment numbers look terrible now. A lot of people who are carrying so-called investment properties, and I wrote about this quite extensively a couple of years ago and over the last couple of years, just pointing out that people were paying so much for the assets that they were not able to make a profit at net rental income on the, you know, renting it out was not sufficient to cover all the expenses of ownership. And people were only doing it because real yields were so low, and they were thinking, well, as long as the property goes up in value, who cares about the income? So I put on an analysis on my blog this week just showing that, you know, at that 816 level average sale price in February, most condos in the major areas were actually renting at a negative carry every month. And it only made sense over a five-year holding period if you could see annual appreciation in the price of the asset. But if you start to see a zero appreciation, which is sort of a best case scenario in this scenario where, you know, 5 years from now, perhaps the value of your asset has not gone up from where it has been in recent months, that quickly translates into a negative 35% or 37% loss over the holding period. Well, obviously that's not attractive, right? And the other thing is that if you do see declines in property price, so such that it's not a zero rate of appreciation over the next few years, but it's actually negative. And that's quite feasible. Again, this is historically informed. This is what typically happens after prices break. They will decline, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40% has been the typical range in past cycles. And it takes several years for them to ever recover that prior cycle high. In which case, you know, many of today's so-called investors are not going to hold on while their asset price is falling, while their cost of carry has doubled in some cases for the highly levered ones or the typically, you know, it's quite normal for people to have been borrowing 80% loan to value. And many of them, you know, 60% of the mortgages taken out in Canada in the spring of 2022 this year were actually variable rate mortgages. You know, those same ones that have basically tripled, in the past few months. So, what it does is it ultimately, you know, at a lag, again, because people, they're not super liquid real estate properties, right? And people think, well, we'll see how it goes, or let's wait for the renewal, let's see if we can increase the rents. But ultimately, investors start selling. And we're seeing that with a lot of institutional, property owners as well, where, you know, funds and, companies that had been buying up all sorts of homes for the rental market, in the past few years are now starting to put big blocks of them on the market again. So this is all price suppressing stuff, which is ultimately excellent for first time home buyers, for people who are trying to get into an abode that doesn't actually bankrupt them. This is all essential, healthy stuff. it will improve affordability. I did some analysis on my blog this week, just showing that at that, you know, that recent average sale price of 617, even with the increase in mortgage rates, people are able to put less down than they did in February by a significant amount, and their mortgage payment is going to be actually slightly lower than it was even at ultra low rates. And that's a function of the principal portion, right? So this is a very healthy development for anyone that's been saving or hoping to buy, waiting to buy. I think they should give it some more time to play out. Again, these cycles tend to be slow moving and lagged over a significant period of months. But ultimately, it means that the people that bought highly levered are going to be coming under increasing pressure to sell. Another big cohort of buyers in the pandemic, of course, was these people who bought secondary properties as recreational or, you know, notional investment properties. And, you know, as they have witnessed this big backup in rates and as back to work in the office has become more common or dominant or reinstated, I think a lot of people are holding a lot of recreational stuff, which they bought financed, by the way, which is never a good idea to buy, you know, personal consumption goods financed, but that has been the trend with low rates. And so a lot of people have payments now that they're wishing they didn't have, right? And this is, don't forget, this is all before Canada has seen any significant uptick in its unemployment rate. In August, we had 5.4% unemployment in Canada from a record low of 4.9% in July. So just imagine that during a recession is quite typical to see a percent or two increase in the unemployment rate. And we're starting to see that in things like, you know, the backlog of orders is drying up significantly. That tends to lead hours worked, which tends to lead layoffs, which tends to lead finally the unemployment rate. And so all of that suggests that Canada's in for an ongoing cash crunch. A lot of families are having a hard time already. And if we are to believe the central banks in their inflation fighting initiative at this point, we know, as I say, inflation's a lagging indicator. It's not going to come down, you know, towards the 2% target that they're aspiring to probably for the next year. It may take up until the next year for it to ultimately get back. That the rate of change is coming down. The, you know, the major component, ironically, of the CPI is the housing component, which is about 40%. So as this bust goes on in the terribly inflated housing stock, you're going to see, you know, again, more properties come on the market, more properties come for rent. This will all be ultimately crushing of the inflationary impulse in housing, which is ultimately very healthy in the longer run, and it will help to bring down CPI remarkably. You know, 40% of the CPI bucket is actually hard goods, which are things like commodities. If you look around, you know, all sorts, like the Brent is off, Brent crude in the European markets is off about 31% since March. Gold and silver's off 30% since March. Gold's off about 18%. This is all a reflection. Copper, all these main goods that are going into constituents of hard assets ultimately are being driven lower by the dollar, which we've talked before, which is at a 20-year high, the dollar index, which continues to bubble up. That's putting a lot of downward pressure on that basket of goods, which makes up the 40% as well. You're also seeing that, you know, excess inventories. This is this overhang from that, you know, mania where everyone was pre-ordering and double ordering and trying to get all these goods that were in short supply during the pandemic. Well, the inventory of goods numbers now are very high across the board, and that suggests that that's going to be deflationary. Ultimately, people have to write down prices in order to, you know, move material when there's less buyers and rates are higher and there's less consumption ability in the economy. So all that suggests that we're in for, as I say, this period of pain, which central banks have been talking about, right? They've been saying, heads up, there's going to be a period of pain here. And that's what they mean. They mean unemployment. They mean a cash crunch. They mean tumbling household wealth, which we're seeing now across the board, whether it's people's retirement savings and or their their housing stock is all, you know, coming off significantly. So this basically just leads to less consumer confidence, which is a healthy thing because consumers were too confident in the prior period, spending too much, borrowing too much, taking too much risk. Recessions are this healthy reset period where everyone kind of gets a comeuppance on those behaviors and goes back to trying to be more prudent. And ultimately, that can be a great thing to restart the economic cycle again, which we could see, you know, even later in 2023, depending on how rapidly this all moves.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her website's JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on BitChute @TalkDigitalNetwork. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.